सरस्वतीं व्यासं दशोजायमुदीरयाय उदीराय तस्ताप्रायेष्व पात्रेषु नित्यं भगवत सेवाय भागवति उत्तमश्लोके भक्ति भवति नैष्ठिकी. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, translations and reports by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Second canto, first chapter, eighth text.
Idam Bhagavatam Nama.
I studied this great supplement, the Vedic literature named Srimad Bhagavatam, which is equal to all the Vedas, with my father, Srila Dvapayan Vyasadeva. Repeat. At the end of the Dvapara Yuga.
At the end of the Dvapara Yuga.
I studied this great supplement.
I studied this great supplement.
The Vedic literature.
The Vedic literature.
Named Srimad Bhagavatam.
Named Srimad Bhagavatam.
Which is equal to all the Vedas.
Which is equal to all the Vedas.
From my father.
From my father.
Srila Dvapayan
Vyasadeva. Srila Dvapayan
Vyasadeva. Srila Prabhupada. The statement made by Srila Shukadeva Goswami that the topmost transcendentalist, who is beyond the jurisdiction of regulations and restrictions, mainly takes to the task of hearing about and glorifying the Supreme Personality of Godhead is verified by his personal example. Shukadeva Goswami, being a recognized liberated soul and the topmost transcendentalist, was accepted by all the topmost sages present in the meeting during the last 7 days of Maharaj Parikshit. He cites from the example of his life that he himself was attracted by the transcendental activities of the Lord, and he studied Srimad Bhagavatam from his great father, Sri Dvapara Vyasadeva. Srimad Bhagavatam, or for that matter, any other scientific literature, cannot be studied at home by one's own intellectual capacity. Medical books of anatomy or physiology are available in the market, but no one can become a qualified medical practitioner simply by reading such books at home. One has to be admitted to the medical college and study the books under the guidance of learned professors. Similarly, Srimad Bhagavatam, the postgraduate study of the science of Godhead, that's in italics, Prabhupada's emphasis, the postgraduate study of the science of Godhead, can only be learned by studying it at the feet of a realized soul like Srila Vyasadeva. Although Shukadeva Goswami was a realized soul like Srila Vyasadeva, Shukadeva Goswami was a liberated soul from the very day of his birth, he still had to take lessons of Srimad Bhagavatam from his great father Vyasadeva, who compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam under the instruction of another great soul, Sri Narada Muni. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructed a learned Brahman to study Srimad Bhagavatam from a personal Bhagavata. Srimad Bhagavatam is based on the transcendental name, form, attributes pastimes, entourage, and variegatedness of the Supreme Person. And it is spoken by the incarnation of the Personality of Godhead, Srila Vyasadeva. Pastimes of the Lord are executed in cooperation with his pure devotees. And consequently, historical incidences are mentioned in this great literature because they are related to Krishna. It is called Brahma Samhitam because it is the sound representative of Lord Krishna, like the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is the sound incarnation of the Lord because it is spoken by the Supreme Lord. And Srimad Bhagavatam is the sound representative of the Lord because it was spoken by the incarnation of the Lord about the activities of the Lord. As stated in the beginning of this book, it is the essence of the Vedic desire tree and the natural commentation on the Brahma Sutras, the topmost philosophical thesis on the subject matter of Brahman. Vyasadeva appeared at the end of Dwapara Yuga as the son of Satyavati, and therefore the word Dwapara Ado, or quote, the beginning of Dwapara Yuga, end quote, in this context means just prior to the beginning of the Kali Yuga. The logic of this statement, according to Srila Jiva Goswami, is comparable to that of calling the upper portion of a tree the beginning. The root of the tree is the beginning of the tree, but in common knowledge, the upper portion of the tree is first seen. In this way, the end of the tree is accepted as its beginning. Om Agnati Medanda Sevaran Jana Salakaya Chaksurunitam Jena Tasmai Shivare Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mahavishnu Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Ramayam Prati Svapratika. So it's interesting that Prabhupada's translation of Dwapara Ado, Ado means the beginning, the start of, the first, is at the end of the Dwapara Yuga. And he cites Jiva Goswami in the purport as explaining that the end of the tree can appear to be the beginning. So he's obviously followed some of the reasoning in his purport, where he says that the Bhagavatam must be learned from persons who are very elevated. It's not just by book learning, because if you went just by book learning, you would translate Dwapara Ado as the beginning of Dwapara Yuga. But because he has taken shelter of great holy persons and learned in their association about the Bhagavatam, just as Shukadeva Goswami learned from his father, he has translated it according to Jiva Goswami's proper perspective on the matter as being the end of Dwapara Yuga or the beginning of Kali Yuga. Very interesting. He came across the statement that God's mercy is greater than God's law. That's also indicative that one's study is alone is not sufficient to elevate one in Krishna consciousness. One's singular study without the help of someone, of a person, Bhagavat. There's a Bhagavatam, which is considered to be the topmost cream essence of all Vedic literature, or equal to all Vedic literature. And there is the Bhagavat, or the Bhagavatas. Sometimes we call them Mahabhagavats, great personalities who make this knowledge understandable for us. I used to read Bhagavad Gita before I was a devotee, before I met Prabhupada. I had read it at least one, maybe more than one translation. And it was always very mystifying, very impossible, actually, to understand. And I would try to get some people to explain it. Maybe it came from India or whatever. But nobody really had an explanation. One person said that this is just a symbolic kind of representation, that they have to fight this war as a symbol of how we have to fight for what we believe in. But there wasn't really a war, because God wouldn't really have people fight a war, you know, so on and so forth. So it became very perplexing. And it wasn't until Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita came available that anyone to really actually understand what Bhagavad Gita means. Everyone is guessing what it might mean. It's symbolic, or it's this, it's that. And even great gyanis and scholars, who probably refers to one of the former presidents of India as being a gyani who said that when Krishna says Mahamanabhagavatam, it doesn't really mean Krishna, the person Krishna. It's something within our mind. So without really hearing from a realized person, without studying under a realized person, it's impossible. Adhi kavanam is the word that means study. It's impossible to actually understand what these things mean. So some sociologists have said that of all of Prabhupada's instruction, Deshakalapatra is the most important, meaning that it is the application of Krishna consciousness that matters. That's one way of saying that understanding the philosophy of Krishna consciousness means to understand how it works. So it's not just an armchair philosophy, but something you can put into practice, not just wild mental speculation or inconclusive thoughts, but thoughts that are related to actions. Actions meaning how we decide what is right, what to do, what is correct, what is incorrect. And we have siddhanta, or we have positive action, rather than just being on the sidelines and trying to be, as a spectator, trying to guess what the action should be. So real philosophy, of course, vijnana, is action, is putting it into practice and acting upon it. Otherwise, there's so many philosophers. And Prabhupada's book on philosophy, where he had Shyam Sundar, I think at one point, maybe somebody else, but mainly it was him, was giving Prabhupada the essence of all the Western philosophers like Nietzsche and Kierkegaard and Descartes and so on and so forth. And in every case, Prabhupada was showing how they were actually inconclusive. And it's the practice, as it was said in the Vedas, for one muni to supersede the other muni with a greater philosophy. It was the practice of all, beginning with Plato and Aristotle and all through the existentialists, to come to a more precise, correct version of what is real philosophy, or what life is all about, what human life is all about. So all of these philosophers were, in that sense, inconclusive, that each one tried to outdo the other. And even in Vedic philosophy, we have other philosophers other than Shukadeva, other than Vyas, who's considered the ultimate philosopher. We have Jaimini, the Karma Mimamsa philosophy. We have Gotama. We have Astravakra. There's the atheist Kapila philosophy, the logic philosophy, the Nyaya philosophy, Kanyada's philosophy. So there are these other systems which are still part of the Vedas, which are not conclusive. They're not based on devotional service. They're based on how to get a better life. There's a saying, get a life. How to get a better sense gratification, how to be more logical, how to analyze things very carefully, and how to be perfect in yoga. That's the Patanjali philosophy, to be perfect in mystic siddhis. We hear about how you can control others with mystic siddhis, or how you can transcend the laws of nature. You can go beyond. You can commune with people in the higher planetary systems. You can inhabit other people's bodies and so on and so forth. So all of these are different ways of looking at life and different philosophies. But the philosophy of Vyas, or the Srimad Bhagavatam, is considered the perfect philosophy. So it was recommended by Sri Chaitanya and his followers that this is the philosophy, this is the book that you can read over and over again. And one of the reasons that it can be done is that it's not just philosophy. As Shukadeva Goswami himself, who is the main speaker of the Bhagavatam, says that he actually had to study under someone else. He had to learn from another person. And Prabhupada gives the example that even in material life, you can't learn something just by the book. You have to kind of surrender to someone. And we have that experience when we go into the class and we see the teacher writing on the board. We don't question the 2 + 2 = 4. We just accept it. Although nowadays it's even becoming questionable whether or not 2 or 2 = 4. And there are systems to prove the number system, mathematical mapping and so on. But generally, this is accepted. And of course, we accepted that teacher's sayings, that he had these long formulas on the board about proving that 1 and 2 = 3. We accepted that. So there's an element of having to surrender, and this is the element of pleasure or of pleasing someone, which comes into the real philosophy of life. It can't just be memorizing things and learning systems, but there has to be a human element, the element of pleasing someone. Ultimately, it comes to the position of Krishna is a person. Krishna has a personality, and we want to please him. And we know that we're pleasing him by pleasing his servants, by pleasing those that are dear to him, his close associates. Then we feel that our life is worthwhile. Sometimes those who are deeply speculating about things are considered to be kind of impersonal or unfeeling about everything. They just seem kind of distant and hard to relate to. And devotees, on the other hand, who are immersed in devotional service, are very much the opposite. They're very soft-hearted, very easy to approach, very feeling. They think in a very feeling way. Once one Prabhupada was asked about this notion of paradukha dukhi, do you feel the suffering of other people? He said that when I think of other people, the condition of this world that's in, I cry. And a devotee said to him, what do you mean, Prabhupada? We all see you happy, and we all seem to be so like you would cry. And he said, no, I actually cry. So he was exhibiting the characteristic of a Mahabhagavan, of one who actually has this sense of being the whips of on the backs of other people are like on one's own back. And in the extreme case, we've read about Vasudeva, who wanted to take the sins of everyone on himself and on the world. Prabhupada compares him to Christ. He wanted to take all the sins, and he didn't judge anyone, but he wanted to do that. And if Lord Chaitanya would just free them of all their sinful actions, of all their sinful activities, he would take them upon himself. So he is glorified eternally in Chaitanya Chaitamrita and other works as being a very great devotee because he wanted to take those sins of others on himself. So hearing of this Bhagavatam is very important, Bhagavat knowledge, and the wholes of the different nine types of devotional service, the hearing part, the hearing aspect is very, very important. We are told that we should be eager to hear Bhagavatam, just like these great souls. They have no other, their ultimate aim is just to go back to the spiritual world and hear the name of Krishna, hear Krishna Katha. That's all they want to do. They're very keen. They don't have any other desires. There's no higher pleasure in life. We have so many different things around us that we are attached to, that we like. Of course, they're in devotional service, but ultimately, the great souls, as we understand, are eager to hear. But since we can't hear, I told the story of Krishnadasa Kinshana, Kinshana Krishnadas, who only chanted Hare Krishna. And Bhakti Siddhanta proved to everyone that they couldn't, we are on that platform. We have to engage in various types of devotional service, and step by step, we'll come to the point. We'll start by having faith and associating, and then getting purified, and getting rid of our anarthas, and gradually we'll come to the point of Krishna Prema, where we'll have no other desire but to hear the name of Krishna. Of course, it doesn't mean that we can't take great pleasure in hearing the name of Krishna. It's considered, as we say every day, offensive not to be attentive to our chanting, to hear the names of Krishna as being the same as Krishna himself. And Krishna says that. So on the one hand, this knowledge is meant to be studied by those who are very intelligent or who are very great. But on the other hand, Srila Prabhupada explained, and it's explained throughout the Bhagavatam, that one need not be a learned scholar. And he told the story of the illiterate Brahmin who was reading just because his spiritual master told him. He couldn't read, but he kept turning the pages, page after page. And in South India, some Brahmin was residing in one of the temples. And people were always making fun of him that he couldn't read, and yet he was turning the pages every day. He was told to read a chapter of the whole Bhagavad Gita every day. Then Lord Chaitanya, in his travels in South India, came across this Brahmin. And when the Prabhupada explains that when the Brahmin saw him, he knew that this man wasn't envious. He wasn't joking. He wasn't making fun of him. Wasn't playing games. So he determined to tell him what was in his mind, not that he would just close up. So when Lord Chaitanya came, you could see that there was something special. And when he asked him, why you reading? He said, I can't read. There's no question of my reading. I don't know how to read. So why are you turning the pages? And he said, I've been ordered by my spiritual master that I have to read the Bhagavad Gita every day, one chapter. And he said, okay, but why are there tears in your eyes writing the pages? And then he explained that my spiritual master told me that Arjuna became the servant of Krishna. And when I think, Krishna became the servant of Arjuna, and when I think of how the Supreme Lord became the servant, became the driver of his devotee, I become full of emotion, and tears go up in my eyes, and I start to cry. I can't help myself. So it's explained that Lord Chaitanya appreciated this comment very much, and he embraced this Brahman and declared him to be actually reading and understanding Bhagavad Gita. Sometimes it's customary to think that one can merge into the existence of God and be very elevated. But for those who understand that Krishna actually becomes the driver or the servant of his devotee, that his devotee in that sense becomes greater than he, that is even a higher position than the merging of becoming one with living in the kingdom of God as an equal. So that's there. One can actually become greater in one sense than Krishna. So, Sukadeva Goswami was very fixed in one sense. He was free from material desires, but he wanted, there was something that attracted him about the pastimes of Krishna. So this is also explained that in the Bhagavatam, I want to read what Prabhupada said about in this verse, Kama Moksha Kama Va, Moksha Kama Dharati. That whether one is free from all desire or full of desire, one should immediately worship the personality of Godhead. The famous verse, Akama Sarva Kama Va Moksha Kama Udharati, Vena Bhakti Yogena, Yijeta Purusham Param. Ijeta purusham pujam. Ijeta means should worship. Prabhupada translates this verse as a person who has broader intelligence, whether he be full of all material desires, without any material desire, or desiring liberation, must by all means worship the supreme whole personality of Godhead. Prabhupada says in his purport, the supreme personality of Godhead, Lord Sri Krishna, is described in the Bhagavad Gita as Purushottam, or the supreme personality. It is he only who can award liberation to the impersonalist by absorbing such aspirants in the Brahma Jyoti, the bodily rays of the Lord. The Brahma Jyoti is not separate from the Lord, as the glowing sun ray is not dependent on the sun disk. Therefore, one who desires to merge into the supreme impersonal Brahma Jyoti must also worship the Lord by Bhakti Yoga, as recommended here in Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhakti Yoga is especially stressed here as the means of all perfection. In the previous chapters, it has been stated that Bhakti Yoga is the ultimate goal of both Karma Yoga and Jnana Yoga. And in the same way, in this chapter, it is emphatically declared that Bhakti Yoga is the ultimate goal of the different varieties of worship of different demigods. Bhakti Yoga, thus being the supreme means of self-realization, is recommended here. Everyone, therefore, must seriously take up the methods of Bhakti Yoga, and even though one aspires for material enjoyment or liberation, from material bondage, one must take up Bhakti Yoga. A Kama is one who has no material desire. A living being, naturally being the part and parcel of the Supreme Whole, Purusham Param, has as his natural function to serve the Supreme Being, just as the parts and parcels of the body, or the limbs of the body, are naturally meant to serve the complete body. So Bhakti Yoga, or Yoga we explain to people, is the means of connecting ourselves with the Supreme Lord of Krishna. This word yoga comes from that word, yoga, which means to link or to join. So the essence, we might say, of Krishna consciousness is to rejoin ourselves with Krishna. Prabhupada sometimes gives the rather ghastly example of a finger that's cut off from a body. And even though someone might know who it belongs to, it's actually useless and non-functional. But as soon as it's connected, and this can be done by modern surgery apparently now, then it becomes useful. And it becomes meaningful. It becomes something. So Prabhupada gave an example that We're all in this condition. We're like fingers or limbs cut off from the body. We have absolutely no function and no use when we're cut off. And therefore, this secular or godless civilization that we live in has produced persons of that caliber or of that nature or of that mentality that there is no connection. They're completely shut off from God. And therefore, in a very kind of brutal way of saying it, are useless and robot-like. So when sometimes the devotee has a vision of people walking down the street as being automatons, not knowing where they're going or what they're doing, or the cars in Washington, they have a D.C., a motorway that goes all the way around. It's in a circle. It's in a circular pattern. It goes around the city. There's about 5 lanes in each direction. And they're all going day and night. There's thousands of cars on there every day. And when you look at them, you kind of wonder, where are they going? Or what are they doing? They're just kind of going around. It's very symbolic. They're just going around in a circle, not really going anywhere, really. So we have that vision sometimes that there's no goal. There's no end in the mind. It's just kind of going around in a big circle. That's the nature of all of us when we are disconnected from Krishna. So the whole purpose of reading Bhagavatam and of practicing Krishna consciousness is to reconnect or to rejoin ourselves. That's what Bhakti Yoga means. To be functional. Because this is actually our nature. And without that connection, there is nothing. One devotee asked Prabhupada, who was living quite some distance from a temple, it was in Los Angeles in 1973, that it's very difficult. And Prabhupada gave the example of the light switch and the distance from the power station. When you switch on the light, whether you're 1,000 miles away from the power station or 100 miles, whatever it is, or you're right next door, the power goes on because the connection is very strong. So the connection has to be there. Once the connection is there, then human beings are functional. They come into their rightful position and they can act in a way that's meaningful and useful instead of useless and without meaning. So I'll stop here because it's after 8 and if there's some questions, you can ask them or some comments. I'll read the verse again. Idam Bhagavatam Nama Purana Brahma Samhita Naritavan Vaparado Pitur Vayanadham. At the end of the Prabhupada Yoga, I studied this great supplement of Vedic literature named Srimad Bhagavatam, which is equal to all the Vedas, from my Bhagavad Srila Bhapan Veda Vyasadeva.
Nice. Today of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from a personal Bhagavat. And sometimes this is emphasized in different ways in our own lives. Can you clarify how this applies to us, how we can hear the Srimad Bhagavatam, how we hear the Srimad Bhagavatam from a personal Bhagavat? Some people say it has to be a living person who's right with us. We have to hear some of this from some people who realize the Bhagavatam.
Of course, reading of the Srimad Bhagavatam, this Srimad Bhagavatam is not just book learning. What Prabhupada is referring to, he's referring to people who maybe can read Bhagavatam, can understand it, or who have just translated the verses. Some have done some purports, but generally they're not realized persons. That kind of learning is considered useless. But Prabhupada's Bhagavatam is different. Prabhupada's Bhagavatam is written according to Vishnu Kalapatra. It's written for people like us in our time, in our place, in our circumstances, to get spiritual enlightenment. Because Prabhupada was, of course, a Paramahansa. And although some might say that one has to learn from a living human being, and Prabhupada is not with us physically, he is still living. Once Vishnu Jan asked him if he didn't feel that he was sometimes lonesome or lonely, separated from his spiritual master, and he had a Bhagavatam in front of him, and he said, "My spiritual master and I are no further away than this." Meaning that he was still alive, in his view. He was still gaining transcendental knowledge, even though he had passed away from his material vision. So, that's one aspect, that learning the Srimad Bhagavatam from Srila Prabhupada's books is not learning from ordinary books or learning from book knowledge. We're getting knowledge from a transcendental personality who is specifically teaching us. In fact, sometimes Srila Prabhupada was even disdainful about us reading books by his spiritual master, because just in that time of 20 or 40 years, a generation or two, things had changed so much that it would be much easier for us to understand reading Prabhupada's books than it would be. And as we know, if you read some of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's books, they're not very easy to understand. I would recommend that everyone reads Prabhupada's books first, at least three times, in general. I mean, that Rama Samhita, you sort of have to have a dictionary right next to you. It's difficult. But he was preaching to a certain group of people, and it was very effective, very, very effective for his time and place. So that's one aspect. Studying Prabhupada's books is not just the kind of book learning that Prabhupada is referring to. And if we study among ourselves or among those who are from who we look up to as being spiritual spirits ourselves, that is also learning from devotees. That is learning from people who have realized the Bhagavatam, because they've realized what Prabhupada has taught them. They've become his disciples or grand disciples because they've assimilated, they've imbibed the knowledge that Prabhupada has given us. Prabhupada has said that you should cram my purports. That's in the folio somewhere. Meaning that it's not just the verses, but it's the purports that Prabhupada has written. So those who have studied those things, and the word studied is used here, are also capable of transmitting transcendental knowledge. So, in other words, Prabhupada set up a society. He didn't just say, it all depends on me being here. But he established a society, his books, his temples, his deities, his sankirtan, his book distribution, his prasada, and his devotees. And it's through these devotees that we gain transcendental knowledge. We please these devotees. We learn what they have to teach us. And we, because they have realized the Bhagavatam, then we can advance. And we can understand what Prabhupada was teaching us by hearing through Prabhupada's messengers. His messages come from messengers. So a messenger is someone who delivers the good, not someone who sets himself up as being the Bhagavad. So even though it said Tathagatam Mahamsalam Muninam Amalatmana, means perfect. Queen Kunti says Bhakti Yoga Vidamartam Tatam Pashima Histriya, that this is meant, this knowledge is meant for Tatam Padma, for the Paramahamsas. For those who, I think we were reading the other day, above the regulations. But anybody can learn the Bhagavatam. Anybody, like the illiterate Brahmin. Anyone who is desired, who is Utsang, who possesses eagerness, that person can learn. And therefore Prabhupada has given us so many wonderful devotees to learn from. And we consider them to be realized. Maybe not on the same level as Prabhupada, but for the sake of learning, we can consider them pure and worthy of our studentship or tutelage or whatever. Even though we might very adroitly measure them against Prabhupada, say they're not equal to Prabhupada, but they're not merely meant to be, because they're followers of Prabhupada. That's a partial answer that you want to comment some more on. Obviously you thought about it probably more than I have.
Therefore, there's a meaning emphasizing the importance of hearing from a Krishna Bhagavan. If it's enough just to read Srila Prabhupada's books, are we actually, in that sense, of course, we can say we're hearing from Paramahamsa, Prabhupada's purports, etc.
Some people get a lot of realization. They're distant from a temple and they read and they make a lot of advancements. Sometimes we meet people that come to the temple and say, wow, where did this person come from? Knows the philosophy so well, has the right attitude, and understands what Prabhupada's inner meaning was and so on. But Prabhupada recommends that the Bhagavatam should be discussed. It shouldn't just be read. It should be studied. So part of study means this give and take. Study is not just poring over tracts. It's alone, Prabhupada indicated, not really sufficient. Even reading Prabhupada's books, he wanted us to discuss among devotees. Machita, Makita, Pranah, because it's a natural thing. Once one becomes involved in this philosophy, one becomes a little soft-hearted. One wants to associate with others. One wants to please superiors. One wants to find the superior person that one can look up to. This is natural. So this is recommended, that we engage in the process. Study means learning. It means asking questions, getting answers. That's the whole Bhagavatam. What are these days all about? So just the study of Prabhupada's books is not recommended, but to study them in association, by hearing, by remembering, by associating, by discussing, by enlightening one another, just hint each other, amongst each other, we get great pleasure. That's the real pleasure is in devotional life, or is association with devotees. So no one wants to, after reading Prabhupada's books, no one will want to be devoid of association with devotees, because in the books themselves it says that we need to associate with devotees. We need to hear and learn in association. What did Prabhupada say in the purport? The instructions are imparted in cooperation with the pure devotees. One of his purports, who says that. So it means that even Krishna himself is associating. Wants to associate. He's giving it, the knowledge, to someone who's giving it to someone else.
We sometimes hear that the Bhagavatam must be heard very systematically, jumping here and there. One must go through very systematic from beginning to end. So, of course, someone who was made Vandas, then we're reading the second canto, it's very early on. Vandas, we just do the fifth canto sometimes. And go to the temple in the middle of the ninth canto, the 11th canto, here and there. We're starting in the middle of somewhere. You're not necessarily hearing it from the beginning systematically. Just clarify. Can you read any part of the Bhagavatam, or hear from any part of the Bhagavatam, get it, understand it?
You can, but Prabhupada recommends that we go through the Bhagavatam step by step and learn it systematically. So in addition to classes, because sometimes new people will come and will be in the third canto, seventh canto, supplementary classes are recommended, hearing seminars, ongoing discussions, and I personally think it's good to kind of keep going back, to the first canto, if there's a lot of new people coming into the temple, because then they won't be able to hear it so much. But, and then personal reading. At one point, Srila Prabhupada recommended that we read every day, everyone, individual reading. And then one can go through the Bhagavatam.
If you just read the verses, for instance, it's like you can easily get out of context and you can easily lose track of where we're going and where they're coming from. And you read Prabhupada's purpose, speaking in the major cantos, it grounds you, puts you where you are and where you're going to. Purports are very, very essential. And that's probably said they're more important than the verses.
Exactly. Yes. Very good point.
Stealing away the cows and carrots from Krishna, last chapter, Prabhupada translated, to sit down on his own, and then, but we can just do that 100,000 or 250,000 or something, what does it mean? Far away.
Yeah, that was very interesting, because Prabhupada was in excruciating pain, you might say, from a material point of view, when he was writing the purports in those last parts of it that he wrote in the 10th canto. But the philosophy is very, very deep. In the one sense, it's deeper than anything else he wrote. So it has great power of penetrating hearts.
You know, exactly the last verse, the last purport that Prabhupada actually commented upon, is it exactly the last verse of that chapter? Or is it?
I don't know. You had your hand up for a long time.
You were talking about non-hamsas. I've seen sometimes even devotees, people like Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, Rama Maharishi, and there are personalities who externally portray what we understand as non-hamsa in such a story. And Prabhupada does not come out as that. He comes up more as a reformer, as a preacher, as an educator, and so on. So could you please clarify Prabhupada's person, position of the Paramahamsa?
Well, is the devil can cite scriptures, we said yesterday. You can put a name on, any kind of name on anything. It doesn't mean that it's real. Yoga. What is yoga? Everyone thinks it means exercises. Transcendental meditation. That means just staring at a dot. It means becoming peaceful. So you can put a label on anything. You know, Paramahansa this, and Paramahansa that, and yogi this, and yogi that. But, you know, this is the nature of people, even very demonic people, to use words and act just the opposite of what they really mean. This is the nature of the demon. And then there are people who aren't totally demonic, they might be in the sort of gray area, but they're deluding people, just like politicians. They use words, just the right words to make everyone feel secure and protected and comfortable and economically viable, and that everything is going to be all right. No taxes, but they're liars. I mean, no advertised professional liars in general. So we have to be careful to see behind the words what they really are, what they're really doing.
Pure devotee, whatever they do, they'll do perfectly.
If one is perfect.
If one's perfect, if one's a pure devotee, absolutely.
Well, again, you know, it's just a very vague word. When we say pure, what does it mean? Is it 99.9? 90%? Is it 80%?
100%.
Well, what is 100% pure? I mean, that's a question also. But, if Prabhupada referred to his disciples as pure devotees, which he did on some occasions, does that mean that every devotee is 100% pure? And that everything that every devotee does is perfect? From one point of view, yes, anyone who's a devotee is pure, and everything that a devotee does is perfect. But obviously we don't think that way, because we have to deal, we have to work together, we have to come to conclusions, just like many great sages that were 100% pure. Sri Goswami had a different version sometimes of a particular verse than that Vishnu Chakravarti had. So it doesn't necessarily mean they're wrong, but it doesn't necessarily mean that everything they did. I mean, we see that everything they did was right, but we, you know, from one perspective, we can say that it's not always perfect. So when we say that everything that a pure devotee has done is perfect, we can say that one who is Mahabhagavat, like Prahlada or Prabhupada, we can say that every time he lifted a piece of paper, every time he turned around, every time he touched his hand to his body, every time he rolled over, every time he looked a certain way, it's perfect. There's no fault. Completely flawless. And we think that way. At least I do. I'm a disciple of Prabhupada. I think that way. But I don't think that way about all of his disciples. But that doesn't mean they're not as good as he was. But it doesn't mean that it also means they're not. I don't see them on the same level. So I think a devotee can see that of his guru, and there's no fault in that. Just like Prabhupada sometimes would write a letter saying something that wasn't intended for you. Well, and I had to write back and say, well, it was intended for me. And he wrote back and said, okay, yeah, it was intended for you. That happened once. But I didn't say that Prabhupada made a mistake, but that he was imperfect. So somehow that doesn't, you know, come into the mind. Everything he did, everything he wrote was perfect. So it also depends on what we mean by perfect. Yeah.
Well, to clarify the discussion we were already having, is if somebody is really an advanced devotee, does that mean they don't automatically be really good at everything? Like, could be a really good cook and a really good manager, and also be really good at farming or whatever it might be?
Well, Prabhupada established a society on the basis that no one person would be so advanced that one person would know how to do everything perfectly. Obviously, the more pure in consciousness one is, the more expert one is, and expert is one of the, what's the Sanskrit word for expert?
Daksha.
Yeah, daksha. One would become, you know, expert in everything. But still, he created a society of devotees where some are more expert in other fields than others. Like, not everyone knows how computers work. Not everyone is, you know, can really cook like Radharani. Not everyone is motor mechanic. So, theoretically, a pure devotee is expert in everything, but Prabhupada created a society whereby the talents of the individuals that aren't possessed by every other individual would be pooled together in a unified way, so you have unity and diversity. So I don't know if that addresses the kind of discussions we're having, but that's kind of, that's one perspective on it anyway. Yes, John?
We also discussed a little bit the other day, but not complete perfection. Everything is really only the property of Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
We're not Krishna. It's about a partial Krishna. We can sort of extend to a certain quantity.
Yeah.
No one's an expert. I mean, anybody expert in the last of Krishna. Mm-hmm. But in this material world, even if you're a devotee, right, without going into the holy law, which, you know, it's just people. There are conversations with Prabhupada, so Prabhupada says, expert means you do it simply for Krishna. You do it for Krishna. Whatever it is, you do it for Krishna. As an expert. The holy law doesn't do anything on his own account. It's everything for Krishna as an expert. So, of course, Krishna is providing it in the heart to do it. Way is to bring everyone to Krishna. And that is not the whole purpose. What's the point of being an expert computer technician if it doesn't help you become Krishna conscious? It's useless. Indeed, it's useful all that. It's just a bhakti, bhagavad, kinjana. What's the use of those qualities if they are not in relationship with Krishna? So their expertise, even if you don't apparently do an expert, if it reminds people of Krishna, it's an expert. This is the take that Lord Brahma was talking about, Lord Brahma, and how he fell victim to his total back.
Mm-hmm.
And we were saying, he was commenting on it, and someone was wondering, you know, well, surely Lord Brahma, he's a pure devotee. God said, no, he's not a pure devotee. He's a devotee. He's not pure. But doesn't he have to be a pure devotee? God said, no, that's not necessary. A devotee is not. Even though he's the head of our sampradaya, he's not actually a pure devotee. In, depending again on what you said, what you classify as a pure devotee, he is actually not pure devotee.
Yeah, that's very negative.
In the case of Lord Brahma, who's the most expert in this universe, not in comparison to Prabhupada's name.
Yeah. Yeah, very, very good point. I was giving the example the other day about the architecture, the engineer, being equal to the draftsman, because the draftsman didn't have ulterior motive. So what you were saying, what is daksha, what is expert, what is perfection, what is amal, what is pure?
You look at the cobbler and the Brahmin, I'm sure the cobbler wasn't any good at deciding that.
Mm.
Wasn't
good. Yeah. Yeah.
In relationship to Krishna consciousness being a natural position, sometimes it seems to be so natural to cast the natural.
It's not natural in this material world to be spiritual. Angels rush in or fools rush in, so I think. It's not. But the most natural position is the work of Mahabhasa Jiva Loki and Jiva Bhutta Sanatana. Normal, natural. They use these words on honey jars, don't they? Normal, natural, pure, God, again. The real position is, the most natural position is to be Krishna conscious. But because we're in the material world, like being in an ocean or something, you know, it's not normal. We're trying to get to land. We're trying to get off the airplane back down to land, but it's normal. It's a struggle. So we have to employ systems that surround ourselves with Krishna as much as we can so that we can see what's really natural and move in that direction out of what appears to be natural.
Maharaj, when you talked about how the path crawling, because I've heard it said often that
Well, here's a way that separates us from Prabhupada. Most of the time when we cry, it is in a mellow, or it's in grief. I think Rupa Goswami said hot tears are grief and cold tears are ecstatic, but you know, sometimes even the cold tears can be deceptive because it is sentimental. It's like Arjuna, we had these sentiments that didn't want to fight against his family, and this could cause anybody to cry. But Krishna had to take him to a higher level. So real compassion is to know that the soul is what needs to be saved, not the body. And so therefore there's a strong distinction made between mundane welfare work and spiritual welfare work. Prabhupada said this is the highest welfare work. So instead of just giving prasad, we give prasad, we give Krishna prasad, and then they can get a benefit. Otherwise there's no benefit. But of course devotees are naturally compassionate and they want to help. and they do sometimes involve themselves, but the real welfare work is, the real part of Yukaduki is coming, if we're really feeling the pain of other people, we'll want to give them Krishna consciousness. That's the real gift that we can give, the best gift we can give. So when sometimes Prabhupada was approached by lawyers or doctors, and especially doctors, I guess lawyers aren't in that category nowadays, but he would say that, no, it's okay, you're doing a good service, but add Krishna consciousness. This is the higher service, the best service to do. And it's very difficult sometimes to separate sentiment from real spiritual sentiment, material sentiment from spiritual sentiment. If one chants constantly, becomes very attached to the name, and saves one tears for Krishna, we might say, and surround ourselves with Krishna consciousness, and give our hearts to the devotees, and worship God, and be compassionate to others, and avoid the envious, that's following Bhagavatam's prescription. So we have to be a little careful about this. Sentiments can sometimes overcome us, and we can become, like so many personalities in the Bhagavatam, we can become overwhelmed by, like Maharaj Bhaj, the deer, and Paranja, and his wife, and this one and that one. You know, there's even transcendentalists can become overwhelmed by material sentiments. So if you see anybody crying, just snap them out of it right away. What are you doing? You sentimental slob. So they will stop there. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jaya. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jaya.